is Ransom against Munoz Montland. And counsel, I assume who are seated at council table are here on that case. The second matter has been moved up to 2 o'clock. And that matter is Mesa Village against Gilbert. Counsel here on that case as well? All right, terrific. We have read the briefs, of course, in these matters. At least one of us has been thoroughly through the record. And so if that helps you streamline your presentation of the case today, so be it. You each have 15 minutes to present your arguments, and the yellow light comes on when there's 5 minutes remaining to help in planning rebuttal for the appellant. I would ask that anyone having pagers or cell phones, please do us the courtesy of having those turned off. And with that request, counsel, when you're ready, you may begin.
May it please the court, Nicole Daniels, 38180, appearing on behalf of the appellant, Ms. Sylvia Ransom, this morning. There are several issues being appealed on this matter. This was a case that was tried back in February of 2009. The first issue is that the trial court erred in denying the appellant's motion to strike the defendant's supplemental expert disclosures, which were filed on January 14th of 2009, just about 1 month prior to trial. Initially, plaintiff filed her expert disclosures on October 20th of 2008, and then the defendant filed expert disclosures November 19th of 2008. In those disclosures, the defendant disclosed all treating doctors of the plaintiff. There were no specific experts listed by name besides the treating physicians. Then a mediation on this case was held December 23rd of 2008. After the case failed to settle at mediation, defendant's office, defendant's counsel's secretary actually contacted a paralegal at appellant's office and scheduled a late IME without any conversation between the two attorneys regarding a request for an extension or anything of that nature. And defendant then filed the supplemental expert disclosures on January 14th, 2009, disclosing for the first time Dr. Steven Dinnenberg and his report. The appellant filed a motion to strike those disclosures on January 20th of 2009. This case at the trial court level was in front of Judge Crabtree. However, regarding the motion to strike the expert disclosures, it went to a hearing before Judge Moss. Judge Moss wasn't as familiar with the case, and Judge Moss conducted a telephone hearing wherein he allowed the late disclosure of Dr. Dinnenberg, stating that it was plaintiff's own delay due to some recent MRIs that were done on December 18th of 2008. However, the results of those MRIs were properly disclosed in a supplemental 26A1 on December 23rd, 5 days after the MRI scans were done. I don't think they could have been disclosed any sooner. Counsel for the appellant did not get those reports until the morning of.
Excuse me, why couldn't they have been disclosed in October? Why weren't the MRIs taken back then? Why was it delayed until 2 days before Christmas?
The plaintiff did not have the MRIs until December 18th.
Why not?
She had some problems with health insurance and getting them scheduled, and she did not have them scheduled or done until December 2008. Prior to the MRIs in December 2008, her last date of treatment for accident-related injuries was December of 2007. So it was nearly a year where she didn't receive any treatment. All of a sudden went to another doctor December 11th of 2008, who again recommended the MRIs, helped her get them under some sort of sliding fee scale where she could afford them. She had them on December 18th of 2008, and they were disclosed 5 days later.
Was there any kind of negotiation with opposing counsel disclosing that there was this difficulty getting payments, and that you anticipated that she anticipated that there would be some problem with discovery as a result of that?
Let me back up. I don't believe there was a specific conversation with defense counsel regarding that. In the prior medical records dating back in 2007, over the course of the plaintiff's treatment for accident-related injuries, there was always this recommendation that she obtain a lumbar and cervical MRI scan. There was mention in her medical reports that she had been unable to do so due to health insurance problems. Defense counsel, from having those then disclosed those medical records, was aware of this recommendation, had the opportunity to have the plaintiff examined by Dr. Steven Dinnenberg prior to their disclosure deadline of November 19th, 2008. However, they chose not to do so.
But since there was no MRI, why would they have done that?
Well, there was always a recommendation for MRI scans. In the report of Dr. Dinnenberg, which was in the record, his initial report never made any opinions as to those MRI scans. It specifically said that he did not review the MRI scans. So his initial report that they disclosed on January 14th of 2009 only discussed all the prior treatment from 2006 and 2007. It didn't make any opinions as to the 2008 MRIs or any 2008 doctor's visits. It wasn't until the time of trial that those opinions first came out. And that was raised the morning of trial with Judge Crabtree.
Let me ask you this. I don't understand what the prejudice is. When the supplemental report was provided, they said that your client could take the deposition of Dr. Dinnenberg at any time, mutually convenient, I assume. And also, in fact, you folks did file a rebuttal report on February 5th. So I'm having a hard time seeing why, without necessarily approving of the procedure, but why there was any prejudice to your client out of this.
Well, there is a prejudice to the plaintiff because the report, plaintiff did file a rebuttal expert disclosure on February 5th of 2009. However, it wasn't a true rebuttal because plaintiff's own treating doctor couldn't rebut all the opinions of Dr. Dinnenberg because plaintiff didn't know what opinions would be expressed at the time of trial. Specifically, at the time of trial.
Well, I'm asking about the rebuttal to Dr. Dinnenberg's report. I realize you have an issue about whether there was statements made by the doctor beyond what was contained in his report, but there was an opportunity, and in fact, there was a rebuttal opinion filed to Dr. Dinnenberg's report, right?
That is correct, although I don't believe it was a true rebuttal opinion. It was called that. It was more of a supplement based on the recent treatment because plaintiff didn't have an opportunity between the court's ruling allowing Dr. Dinnenberg's testimony and the time of trial to have her re-examined and that report of Dr. Dinnenberg's reviewed by Dr. Nadler, the plaintiff's testifying expert at the time of trial.
And following up on Judge Miller's question, I mean, the rebuttal report and I guess conversations after that, Dr. Nadler went beyond his report, didn't he? He was going to propose to give testimony about future harm and damages in the future. And I mean, didn't at the end of the day, didn't Judge Crabtree basically say, look, neither one of you have really played by the rules, but I'm just going to let all this in and let both experts talk about what they want to talk about. And if we're faced with an abuse of discretion standard here, how can we find that that's an abuse of discretion if you basically let both sides get in stuff that maybe should have been, maybe should not have been disclosed earlier?
Well, I don't think that's the case from Judge Crabtree. He specifically held Dr. Nadler to opinions contained in Dr. Nadler's reports through the initial expert disclosures of the plaintiff and her so-called rebuttal reports filed on February 5th, 2009. Dr. Nadler was not able to testify to anything outside of those reports. More specifically, plaintiff could not question Dr. Nadler as to opinions of that Dr. Dinnenberg was going to issue as to the MRI because they'd never been disclosed to the plaintiff. Defense counsel had an opportunity to review the reports of Dr. Nadler and review what he was recommending in terms of future treatment and his opinions regarding the MRI findings. That was written out and disclosed to defense prior to trial. Plaintiff never knew what specifically Dr. Dinnenberg was going to say as to the MRIs. He went on at the time of trial that the findings were not accident-related, degenerative changes, gave links lengthy testimony about acute herniations versus chronic disc problems and issued opinions that the MRI findings were over a decade old instead of related to the accident. Plaintiff didn't have an opportunity to see those opinions prior to the time of trial. More specifically, it was prejudicial to the plaintiff. Plaintiff raised the issue with Judge Crabtree that due to timing issues, her testifying expert, Dr. Nadler, would not be available to return to trial to provide rebuttal testimony due to his previous commitments. I believe this has been a year and a half or more ago. I believe at the time he had a scheduled surgery and was going to be out of the state, couldn't come back to testify. And plaintiff couldn't elicit the testimony in her case in chief because she didn't know what Dr. Denenberg was going to be allowed to testify to from the MRI findings because it was never disclosed in a written report of Dr. Denenberg.
Excuse me, counsel, but does the record reflect, by way of offer of proof or otherwise, what this additional evidence that Dr. Nadler would have provided if he had been allowed to testify?
If he had been allowed, you mean to return and provide rebuttal testimony?
Whatever, you're saying he wasn't allowed to answer questions. Yeah, if he was, I guess that's what you're saying. If he was allowed to return and testify on rebuttal, is there an offer of proof that as to what additional testimony he would have provided?
I don't believe so.
So how can we determine then whether or not there's prejudice if we don't know what that evidence is?
Well, I think there is prejudice because plaintiff didn't even have a chance to speak with her testifying expert about the opinions of Dr. Denenberg because those didn't come out until the second, I believe it was the second or third day of the trial, after her case in chief had already been presented and her own expert had already testified and was unavailable to issue any additional opinions to rebut what Dr. Denenberg testified to regarding the MRI and the disc problems in the case.
So between that and the motion for a new trial, you had no opportunity to consult with the doctor?
There was no opportunity to consult with the doctor during the trial. I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Hi, Ms. Daniels. You have a little less than 5 minutes.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Stuart Jorgensen, 21908. I'm appearing for Tom Henson, who has recently moved to Utah. He's the trial attorney, and for Janice Munoz-Watlin. Okay. In short, there are no issues of law that are new in this, and they're all issues of discretion by the trial court judge, not one, but two. We had the one judge who was handling the preliminary matters and came with the same conclusion. I think it was Judge Moss, came to the same conclusion as the actual trial court judge. And both of them exercised their discretion and came to the same conclusion that given the whole balance of things under Rule 37, there was substantial justification for the additional opinions by both sides. And then there was harmless failure in that it really didn't change the outcome of the trial because plaintiff knew of the IME, a doctor, had an opportunity to take a deposition and was actually invited and encouraged to take the deposition of the IME. There wasn't anything essentially new in the IME opinion. The trial judge indicated that it doesn't come as a surprise to anybody that an IME will say that the findings are degenerative in nature and not related to the accident. On the other hand, the plaintiff Dr. Nadler would say that the findings are related to traffic accident. The basic opinions are not surprising at all, and the judge actually went and had analysis of it in the transcript of the hearing before the trial. Also, there was a rebuttal expert. It wasn't just the MRI report in December and the medical opinion went along with it. There was also a brand new doctor that came up in plaintiff's disclosures in January and two visits in January. There was plenty of opportunity to talk with one or both of the doctors by plaintiff in January, and there should have been an opportunity, it was available at least, to talk with the doctor following the hearing in the beginning of February saying, this is what the IME will be allowed to say by the court given the compromise that was discussed in the open hearing. What are your opinions on it? And then finally, at trial, there were opportunities for cross-examination as well. But in short, given all the different evidence that was available at trial and the long history of similar complaints and problems by the plaintiff before the first accident, the presence of the second traffic accident, which is in the record itself, the large gaps in treatments, and the lack of surprise from what either doctor on either side was going to say, it really, there's no information or basis upon which to say that the outcome of this trial would have been any different. And I do want to also point out that there was a discussion in the transcript of the hearing where the judge spent quite a bit of time talking about the lack of prejudice, the lack of surprise, and the opportunity to have inquired into any opinions if they had wanted. So in short, everything that the judges did in this matter essentially falls within their discretion. And it should not be, their discretionary calls should not be set aside unless there's a clear abuse of discretion, and there just isn't.
Ask you a question about that. One of the trial court's finding was that the delay was caused by the delay in submitting Dr. Denenberger's report was submitted, was caused by the delay in submitting the MRIs. Given that Dr. Denenberger's report didn't refer to the MRIs, isn't that finding without support in the record then?
Well, my understanding after I read through the transcript is that for whatever reason, Tom Henson was not able, did not have his hands on a copy, was not able to give it to Dr. Denenberger. I don't know why, but that was in an explanation during the hearing, and I do believe Dr. Denenberger's report made a reference to MRIs that were not available to him. And so there was a reference to an MRI that had apparently arisen only recently, but he wasn't able to opine upon it at that time. And the judge took care of that, both judges took care of that by saying that you would expect an IME to say things consistent with their earlier opinion. His opinion, without reference to the MRIs, was this was a degenerative matter with a very brief soft tissue irritation, perhaps, and that the judge specifically indicated that, can you tell me, is there anything that would cause you surprise that, that this IME wouldn't say, after reviewing the actual MRIs, that it is consistent with his earlier opinion? And is there anything, plaintiff, to say that the review and opinions of the new MRI wouldn't also be consistent with her earlier doctors? So it's, everything is simply an expected extension of the earlier opinions.
The earlier opinion was the one that was done in January of 2009, right?
Of Dr. Denenberger, the IME, that is correct, sir.
Yes, so which was late under the schedule. And the justification for that was they needed the Dr. Denenberger to respond to the MRIs, and he didn't respond to the MRIs in his report. He came up with some other information, which may or may not have been a surprise. I understand your point on that. But doesn't that make the finding that this report was justified at all erroneous?
I believe Dr. Denenberger's report wasn't just to review the MRIs. I believe that the plaintiff was coming back with additional complaints of mental disorder, bowel incontinence, urinary incontinence, and continued severe complaints that were not there when she stopped treatment with Dr. Nadler over a year before. So it wasn't just the MRI, it was a whole bundle of wax. And Dr. Denenberger, if I'm not mistaken, opined upon that whole ball of wax and his examination, which wasn't necessary if there hadn't been all these new developments. The attorney was perfectly willing to go in with the opening, closing, and cross-examination, but this new information changed that dynamic. I have no further argument unless there are further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Daniels? You have 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, just going back to the report of Dr. Denenberger that was disclosed on January 5th of 2009, which was late, it made no mention of plaintiff's recent treatment or the MRIs. Plaintiff had been back to see a Dr. McMullen on December 11th of 2008, had the MRIs December 18th of 2008. Each of those records was disclosed to Mr. Henson at the mediation on December 23rd and then formally disclosed later that day in a supplemental 26A1 disclosure. So defense counsel had those records. They claimed that the entire reason for needing the late IME was because of the recent treatment. However, Dr. Denenberg never had either the doctor's report or the MRIs to comment on. The rest of his report, or his entire report that was disclosed late in January of 2009, was all based upon the previous treatment, which plaintiff had disclosed her experts back in October of 2008.
Trial management order give permission to the defendant to call any witness for purposes of rebuttal at trial.
I don't specifically believe that it did. This issue was raised initially orally with Judge Crabtree at a pretrial conference approximately 30 days prior to trial. The issue was brought up. Judge Crabtree advised plaintiff's counsel to file the motion to strike. Plaintiff's counsel filed a motion to strike, which was then heard by Judge Moss. And then the issues were raised again the morning of trial with Judge Crabtree.
I guess my question goes to this. Could the defendant here simply not have filed any kind of subsequent report, any kind of supplemental report whatsoever, and just called Dr. Denenberg to rebut your supplemental report at trial?
I'm not sure on that. He never disclosed an expert prior to that who would testify by name back in November of 2008, which was the deadline for the defense to disclose their experts.
That's why I ask you under the trial management order whether the defendant reserved the right to call any witness for purposes of rebuttal.
I apologize, I don't recall that off the top of my head right now as to what the trial management order said. Further, when plaintiff filed her response or her motion to strike the late disclosure, defense counsel filed a response, and in their response, they stated that the reason for filing the late expert disclosure was because they were hopeful that the case would settle at mediation. There's nothing in the rules that allows the defense to disclose a late expert based upon a failed mediation or a case not settling. The rule is very clear that defense needed to disclose their experts either 30 days after plaintiff's disclosure or 90 days prior to trial. In that case, 90 days prior to trial, they disclosed plaintiff's treating doctors. They didn't mention any doctors by name, never requested that plaintiff submit to an IME. Again, it wasn't until after the case failed to settle at mediation. Defense counsel cited in their response to the motion to strike that they didn't want to incur the additional expense. Again, that's not allowed under the rules. There's nothing specifically allowing for that.
But none of that is really all that relevant here, is it? Because if there had never been a new examination and the MRIs, then we wouldn't have the situation. So it wasn't just a question of the case not settling. It was the case didn't settle, and on the day of the mediation, all of a sudden the defendant was given the information on this new stuff. So the fact that it didn't settle, it seems to me, is, I don't see how that by itself is all that relevant here.
Well, they're arguing, defense argued in their written response to the motion to strike, that that's why they needed the late IME. Again, going back, their report from Dr. Denenberg in January of 2009 does not make any mention that he reviewed the 2008 doctor visit or the 2008 MRIs, which defense counsel had on the day of mediation to provide to their expert, Dr. Denenberg.
My name is Daniels. Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course. Thank you.